Okay, so last week we were transitioning out from the first 39 chapters that dealt with the day of the Lord and the Father preparing a people to be inhabited by his Son. And we talked about how that first time period of dealing was necessary for the Son that was in the Father's heart to be made real and made manifest and fill a people. And we see the glorious vision that God gave to Isaiah, and we see how that works itself out practically in our lives and in the lives of all those who bring forth Christ and come together as a glorious Zion, a corporate habitation for him. Now, I would like to continue just starting in chapter 40. So if you want to turn to Isaiah chapter 40, we'll begin there. And we're just going to look at a few things here. Before we read through some of those scriptures, I just want to read a few things and introduce the line of thought from the heart of the Father that may help us to really embrace the spirit of these words in the place of this time period, in the purpose and plan for Christ in us, in our lives. I'm just going to read here just real quickly. People, sheep, the living stones of Zion need to be led. They need to be fathered and built in the true form of what they have been made in the risen Son, in Cyrus. We spoke of Cyrus at the end of last class and his resurrection. They need to be fed and nurtured and gathered into a place where that holy seed that they've been cleaving to can begin to form. Is this any less the love and care of the Father as seen in the discipline when the day of the Lord needed to be applied like a mortal wounding? Okay, so we've been talking about from the very beginning how Isaiah represents the Father, and how the Father's heart for his Son, and how the Father sees us as those who will be one with his Son and filled with his Son, it never changes. And from that viewpoint, we see that whether it's the Old Testament or the New Testament or the first 39 chapters of Isaiah or the last 26 chapters of Isaiah, they're all one heart. It's all one Father declaring the one Son that he loves and embracing whosoever will into that Son and taking them, if you will, into his bosom, into his arms, like a shepherd, like a father, and carrying them on this journey for Christ to be formed in them. And, you know, a little baby doesn't always understand what the journey is about. Like, there may be times when you carry that child through a very cold portion of land. You know, you're taking him somewhere, and he's like, wow, Dad, this is freezing. And then you're in the car or something, or in your carriage or whatever, and it's very bumpy. He's like, wow, Dad, this is really bumpy. And you can't eat for a while. Wow, Dad, I'm starving, you know. And the kid can go, I think you love me when it's not cold. I think you love me when there's food in my belly. But boy, when it's, you know, freezing and bumpy and I'm starving here, I just think you're a bad father, that your heart has changed. But what God is trying to show us in the fullness of this book is that the heart of the Father never changes, not just towards his Son, but towards those who are joining to Christ in oneness, which he desires for all mankind to do. It is his purpose for the whole earth to be filled, for every earthen vessel, every human person born, male or female, of any tribe or nation, to be filled with his Son. That is his heart. His heart does not change. And for those who are like that very, very small remnant that will cleave to the holy seed through whatever they have to go through to stay in union with the living God, those are the ones who have signed up for the journey. You know, they've said, listen, I will lose everything. God, you're not going to shake me away from the living God. You can take away the temple. The city can be destroyed. We can be deported. Our families can be separated. All that we know can be lost. There can be no religious place of worship. But the holy seed that is in me is my tie to God. And that can't be taken. And God, you're not going to shake me loose from that faith. And Babylon, you're not going to shake that holy seed out of me. You can shake and shake and shake, but you're not going to. And those who God could not shake loose, and those who Babylon could not shake the seed out of, are those who are on a journey that they're just going to go all the way in to the holy hill. I mean, and what I mean by that is they're going to allow the seed, that holy seed that they have cleaved to be formed. They're in. They're in for the full haul. They're in for the mature harvest. They're in for the process. And, you know, a lot got shook out. Scripturally speaking, 90% got shook out. That's what God said. Okay. Are they worse? Are they less righteous? No, there is nobody righteous but the holy seed, but God. We establish that through 39 chapters of judging all flesh. We all should know at this point in spiritual, you know, terminology that none is good but God. And just because we cleave to a holy seed doesn't make us better. It makes us just smart. We made a good choice. We thought Jesus was worth it, and we want his life more than our own. That doesn't make us righteous. That just makes us the Lord's and makes us good ground for the seed to grow in. And so God has this group now that he couldn't shake away and Babylon couldn't shake out. And it's chapter 40. We talked last week how that's the time period after the exile, after the Babylonian captivity, towards the end of that 70 years when they're able to come back to rebuild Jerusalem because the Lord raised up the Persian King Cyrus, who made a decree that all exiles could go back to their native lands and worship freely. We saw how King Cyrus was a type of Christ in resurrection and how he frees us from the bondage and the captivity that we have to be free to worship him, to be free to gather as his body, to be free to become that habitation that God's heart is longing for. And so what a beautiful picture of the risen Christ. We ended last class with that. And so now the seasons are changing. Once again, because the seasons are changing, does that mean God's heart is changing? I mean, if you walk away from this class with anything, walk away with that God's heart doesn't change with the seasons or the dealings or the necessary processing for Christ to form in us. Now, that's not a new concept. That's not modern Christianity 2010. That's Isaiah, you know, 537 B.C. Okay, that's as old can be, thousands and thousands of years. Older than thousands of years. It's before the Ancient of Days. It's timeless wisdom that there is a process. And seasons were meant for different colors, different forms, different manifestations of care, right? But if we have eyes to see from eternity, from the beginning, from the heart of God before time and space, before man, before anything was created, we can see in God his desire for sons created after the image of his son, sons birthed out of union with his son, formed after his likeness, filled with his spirit, partakers of his nature. That's, we don't have to know a lot. We don't have to figure out a lot in the here and now. We have to know one thing, God's heart. And in this book, God has given us the ministry of his grace to see that Isaiah is really a father's view. And when you put that over these scriptures, you just really can saturate your heart in the care of the Father. Not just now in 40 to 66. It would be such a sorrowful thing if we began now to open up our hearts to the love of God and we kind of stayed frozen in a corner, paralyzed with fear for the first 39 chapters. Oh, that was a bad 39 chapters. And gosh, I had a scary dad. And everywhere I went, mortal wounding was lurking around the corner to grab me and you know, make manifest my evil motives. You know, but the Father's love ordered that. He did it because he wanted real sons to partake of his holiness. And he scourged us, right? He did it with love and purpose and desire, passion even for his son and his sons. Nothing's changed, only the season. Only the season. Why did we have to go through 39 chapters of the mortal wounding, of the day of the Lord, of what's called judgment? Because it prepared us. It made us ready by emptying us. Now we are not going to be the Holy One. We're not going to be a habitation for ourselves to do things for God. We're emptied out. There's room in the house for God to inhabit us. Well, we had to do that. We had to do that. Now we're not all focused on our greatness or the externals of religion, like a big temple or a great ministry or a Jerusalem in the earth. We're focused on a seed hidden deep inside of us that we know is nothing of ourselves. And it's all we got. It's the only thing we got, and it's the only thing of life there is. Real life, God life in us. So, you know, we're ready now. We're ready to be filled. We're ready to be formed, but not us be formed, Christ in us be formed. There's a big difference. Many times people go, well, you know, I'm the clay and God's crafting me to be like Jesus. He is. No, sir. God is not crafting you to be like Jesus. He crucified you. He's crafting you to be a habitation for Christ to be formed in you. You are. No, sir. Are you ever going to be molded into his likeness apart from his life in you, forming you from the inside out into his image? May these things be so clear to us that we never blur these lines, because these lines aren't near to each other. These are two universes apart. They're dimensions apart, beyond dimensions. They're life and death. Us in his image, according to the carnal mind, is just an increase of us trying to be like Jesus. After the first 39 chapters of Isaiah, you will never buy into that lie or that religious concept or at times that Christian church reality of teaching. You will go, sir, if you want to form something godly in me, it's going to have to be God in me, because there's no good thing in my flesh. And I was made to be inhabited by the Son. Have you seen the Father's heart? Do you comprehend the eternal plan of the Godhead? It is not to make us better. You know, and I'm not saying that, I know y'all know that, but maybe somebody listening doesn't, and we're not speaking that with condemnation, but with grace.
There's a book, you know, that talks about being made in like Christ. I forget the name of it. I got it at the house, and so the principles behind it is that we become like Christ. I forget what the name of it is.
It's okay.
Yeah, but
it's a real it's true.
Yeah, it's a real popular one. It was mm-hmm. once upon a time. Mm-hmm. And what you just said is really the truth of what we are to be.
And you know,
being in Christ, not just
like
know, it's called imitation of Christ. Yeah.
And I've read that book and just
yeah, I did too.
I think that Thomas A. Kempis is speaking of Christ in you, but the title lends itself to another understanding. But you know. If you know the heart of God, you can hear that, hey, the title may say the imitation of Christ, and we may even read things that say being formed in his likeness, but we'll know what it's really saying isn't imitate Jesus, is saying let Jesus be formed in you. Imitate Christ by allowing the life of God to fill you, just like he let the life of his Father fill him, and it's a good point. And we're only saying these things not to put down anyone, because God knows only by the grace of God would we even, you know, taste of the heart of the Father for his Son to be formed in us. But once you pass through the first 39 chapters of Isaiah in our own lives, we won't blur those lines. We won't confuse those. We'll know it's all about the Son. And we'll know that everything we're going through is for the Father to receive his Son through a people, a Zion filled with the glory of God, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory.
You know, I often thought I was doing good in trying to imitate, you know.
And but I think that we do that because we love him.
Right.
We want to be imitating him. We want to be like Jesus only because we love him so much and our hearts are so towards the Lord. But we end up going through that crisis of Romans 7 where we realize we can't be like Jesus because our flesh is corrupt, and it's going to take another life to bring forth the glorious temple that Isaiah prophesied concerning the people of Judah and Jerusalem being the fulfillment of. And so, you know, that seems remedial, but I really want to build the case of the Father's heart here. And so we've transferred into a new season. We haven't changed the essence of God's love. We haven't left the eternal and constant purpose in the heart of the Father. We're still in the same place. And so now we want to just embrace in this transition period just these few principles that we know the Father's heart, that we're becoming more and more aware of the Father's purposes, and that in all seasons the Father is of one heart for his Son. And now let's look at chapter 40 and just read. And we're going to look at a couple things that the scriptures are going to declare to help us enter in to the time period of focusing on Christ being formed in us. Okay? Because we need to transition. We need to transition our focus. So the first word is comfort. And it means speak to the heart of the people. Comfort ye my people, saith your God. Speak comfortably to Jerusalem and cry unto her that her warfare is accomplished. So the first thing he's trying to embrace them with is the comfort now of it is finished. Jesus has bore your iniquity. You were crucified with Christ, buried with Christ, and are now risen with Christ. I speak comfort to you because your warfare is accomplished. You have received of the Lord's hand double for all your sin. This is no longer a sin issue. It never was a sin issue. It was an emptying you of yourself issue to make room for the Son. But if you are going to obsess over your lack beyond the time, if you are going to stay in the remorse of the mortal wounding instead of allowing it to prepare your ground for the filling of the seed, then I speak to you comfort. Comfort. The warfare is accomplished. I'm speaking to your heart tenderly as a father, drawing you into my bosom to partake of my nurturing of that seed. It is my season, says the Father, to nurture the seed of my Son in you. And I draw you with arms of comfort, arms of embracing you into the reality that my Son bore your iniquities, that you have been dealt with in the person of Jesus, who paid double for all your sins. There is no more issue in my heart concerning what I put away of the flesh in my Son when he was crucified. And he's just gathering his children now. Remember, once again, who is he comforting? He's comforting that remnant that did not let go of the seed. He's comforting that remnant that lost everything to hold on to the living God. He's comforting those people that are in it for the long haul. You know, we take these scriptures out of context and we just hear this general clarion cry of comfort, which it is eternally out from the heart of the Father. But specifically, he's saying, listen, I am ready to manifestly gather you in to this incredible